Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, LA, greatly appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Great show lined up. How about a lot of news in the NBA? So a lot of information on the NBA side of things. That's how I'm going to start the show. Just a quick little rundown of what we got going on. John Urand from the Sports Business Journal, how the NFL set, if needed, to shake up its schedule. He'll come up in about half hour or so. And if you guys have seen LA Originals on Netflix, Estevan Oriol, Steve-O on LA Originals, very, very fascinating documentary on him and Cartoon. Cartoon actually is probably going to come up next week, but LA Originals, he'll come on around 8:30 or so. So excited to have him on as a part of the show as well. So latest on the NBA, and I would say as I do my research on a day-to-day basis, and as every NBA fan out there, especially here in Los Angeles, just kind of looks to see anything change with the NBA, any new information that's come up. A while back, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, had mentioned that May 1st would be the next time that they meet with their board of governors and continue to have that conversation, that dialogue of what kind of the next steps are going to be for the NBA. And I think the theme has been this. Since the NBA was suspended, what is it now? 6-plus weeks ago, almost 7 weeks, something along those lines, that the NBA was postponed. I think Adam Silver has had a very similar theme the entire time. He's not overpromising. He's not talking too much. He is saying that the data is going to be more important than anything else. And this is what we learned today. So I'll play this real quick because Adrian Wojnarowski, who's the best in the business of getting any information that's NBA related, was on SportsCenter earlier today. And there are two things that I took away from these conversations, or at least from all the reports and the articles that are out there. Here's Wojan pushing the start of the season to December. And we're not talking about this year. We're talking about the following season. I'll talk about this year in a second. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski.
Well, that conversation about pushing back the start of next season into December, that continued today on the owner's call with Adam Silver and the league office. And a good part of the thinking and the rationale for pushing back the start of the season, regardless of whether this season resumes or not, that it ultimately gives the NBA more time and more dates that they could have more fans in their arenas. That in the middle of October, when the season would normally start, you may not have the ability to be able to put fans in there. Fans may not have the confidence to want to be there. But the further you push it down the road, I think the league feels the more opportunity they'll have to be able to have people in arenas for more games during the year. And that's an attractive factor right now for the NBA, whether they resume this season or not.
So this is why I kind of want to lead with this. The next big conversation is delaying the 2021 season until December. This has nothing to do with completing this season. This is just kind of on its own. It's separate. They want to buy more time to get fans back into arenas for most to create the most possible games next season with fans. Right? That's kind of the concept there. I'll get into this year if we still got a shot and all the different gameplays are there, but I want to start with this. One source said that if you start in December, that doesn't mean the people are coming back in December. Maybe they're back in March, one member of the Board of Governors told ESPN on Friday. Talks have been centered on a season that would start prior to Christmas and extend into late July, early August. The NBA draft and free agency would follow the end of the season. So this this is interesting. I never even really thought of this. I know that everything was based on, well, what happens this year? So if this season gets played out, if we get that opportunity to play out this year, then you just assumed, okay, well, now you have to push next season back. That's critical. That's everything. You don't have a choice but to push next season out. And you're going to do it specifically because you're trying to crown a champion this year. That was kind of the concept and the idea there. But at the same time, if pushing next season out, regardless of what happens this year, maybe this is going to be the new norm for the NBA. Island was just saying it. You know, he was getting me and Brian Kamenitsky's opinion, is filling in for Mason today. Just getting our opinion of what do you like the idea of a December start? I love it, by the way. I've said this, that for casual fans, that one makes a ton of sense to me. For casual fans, you're going to get me either way. You can start in December. You could have games starting at 7 in the morning. I'm in. And most NBA fans would be. But for the more casual fan, starting your season in December and doing it regardless of what happens with the 2019 and 2020 season, that we're all hoping we can restart and crown an NBA champion and give the Lakers an opportunity to win a chip and tie the Boston Celtics, that whole thing, yes, we're all on that boat. But in this regards, for the December idea, that's the one thing I took out of today more than anything else. Were there other things that happened? Yes. The NBA postponed the May draft lottery and the combine today. That's what sources tell ESPN, but I don't think that's a surprise, right? The only other thing that they're going to have to eventually cancel is going to be the NBA draft, or postpone. I'll use the word postpone, which is set for June 25th. That news, it's like, okay, yep, I hear that. I understand that. But I don't think that's the biggest news in the world. What I took out of today was, no matter what happens the remainder of this year, whether we get a chance to crown a champ or not, they want to push that next season to start in December. 877-710-ESPN. What are your thoughts on that, by the way? Would you have a preference? Do you care if you're an NBA fan? Would you rather have the season always start in December, or are you one of those? Why would you change it? I think I talked to Michael Thompson about this. MT's not the biggest fan of, you know, making changes. He kind of likes the way the structure is, and I'm sure each fan has their own opinion on this. But would you prefer the NBA season starting a little bit later, kind of towards the end of the regular season when it comes to NFL football, or do you like it exactly how it is, which, you know, was slated to start in that mid-October, that third week of October, is the way the NBA has been set. There were so many different articles today that were coming out about the NBA. One of them was from Tim Bontemps and Brian Windhorst, which we're working on Windhorst. I'll try and get him on next week. But they had this article about the blueprint on finishing the season. Must be fast, simple, and reliable testing. So there's a lot of layers to it, a ton of layers to it. And luckily, Windhorst was on the jump. Sage Steele on SportsCenter kind of gave a quick little rundown of what all the different scenarios are and the conversation, the meeting that was had with the Board of Governors. So I want to do that when we come back. I want to play some of that sound for you guys, and we'll get a chance to react. Just a quick reminder, don't miss episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance on May 3rd, which is this Sunday, at 6 p.m. on ESPN and streaming live on the ESPN app. If you missed episodes 1 through 4, you can stream them now with ESPN On Demand and on the ESPN app. Ireland was reading off a tweet from Arash Markazi of the LA Times. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of this Kobe Bryant portion this weekend on Sunday. I think episode 5 is what Ireland was talking about. So again, episodes 5 and 6, Last Dance, this Sunday at 6 o'clock. If you missed episodes 1 through 4, make sure to go back. You can stream them now with ESPN On Demand and on the ESPN app. When we come back, we'll hear from Brian Windhorst, who was on the jump a little bit earlier, and Sage Steele had this just great on SportsCenter, this quick recap of everything that went down in that Board of Governors meeting. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Hopefully everybody's getting ready for the weekend. You know, it's interesting. I hear Mason a few different times. He jokes around about it, where he doesn't know the day of the week. And, you know, I get it. Everybody's home. But still doing the show, the Monday through Friday part, man, I am valuing the Saturday and Sundays now. You're trying to put together a show. You're trying to figure out, okay, get guests. And Jesse's working. Curtis is working. We're all kind of figuring out the structure of the show. Trust me, man. By the time Friday rolls around, I'm ready for the weekend. So Brian Windhorst was on the jump a little bit earlier today. So let me just kind of set this up. there's an article right now on ESPN.com, Tim Bontemps and Brian Windhorst, Blueprint on Finishing the Season Must Be Fast, Simple, and Reliable Testing. So there is an incredible amount of layers to this, and I want to read a few things. So per a source who talked to Adrian Wojnarowski, there must be enough available public testing to avoid backlash toward the NBA for acquiring and using kits. The league expects it will need approximately 15,000 tests. There was the NBA got some backlash right when the season was postponed. If you guys remember, they tested the whole Utah Jazz team. They obviously tested the Oklahoma City Thunder team. After they tested the Jazz, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell both tested positive. There's been other teams too. You know, the Lakers obviously got tested, two Lakers, and we don't know which Lakers tested for COVID-19, and kind of go down the list. The Brooklyn Nets, there were four players. One of them was Kevin Durant. The NBA took a little bit of a hit, and what I'm referring to there, the public didn't like that the NBA was able to get these tests when the tests are so hard to come by. And I think that's going to be one of the things from a public relations standpoint that's always going to be a challenge for the NBA. Of course it's going to be a challenge. By the way, not just the NBA, all these sports. I was doing a show. We were still at the studio. It was the week that they postponed the season, and Rudy Gobert tested positive. And one of the TVs was on CNN, and it was just talking. It was while I was doing the show, so I could just read the headlines. And that was one of the topics. This is obviously a nationally televised news show. This isn't just for sports fans. One of the topics was, how come they're getting tested? Players are getting tested. And, you know, there's other individuals out there where it's more needed aren't getting tested. So there are going to be an incredible amount of challenges that comes from this. Dr. Vivek Murthy, former Surgeon General, advised the NBA on the coronavirus, says, I do think it would be disturbing to many if there was massive testing that was available to a sports league at a time when people who are at high-risk situations were still having a difficult time getting access to testing. Fair. You know, like, I'm not going to sit here and argue that. I want sports back more than anybody else. But it has to be done the right way. And I think that's part of, you know, this article and this conversation that's being brought up. And these are questions that should be brought up. Also, other unanswered questions. Would the NBA allow coaches such as Greg Popovich, who's 71 years old, Mike D'Antoni, 68 years old, who are at high risk to go to work? If you look at COVID-19, and you know, there's a lot of research out there. Obviously, those who have health issues already or respiratory issues already, and there is that's common for those who are older. They're higher at risk. It's not necessarily the players that you're, you know, concerned about, because these players are in such incredible shape. You know, obviously they're as healthy as can be. Some of these guys, 5% body fat. They're watching every single little thing they do, because that's their occupation. That's their job. That's why they're so good at their craft. That's a big part to do with it. But it's everybody else that's involved. It's umpires. It's coaches. It's managers. There are a number of different people that are a part of putting this whole thing together. So those are going to be some of the obstacles. Those are going to be some of the challenges. I want to play Brian Windhorst and Tracy McGrady. Both of them were on The Jump. And the conversation is coming up of what some of the challenges are going to be, number one. And also the question, is it worth it? Here's Brian Windhorst and Tracy McGrady.
That's it, Rachel. The public relations issue with the testing. There was a memo sent out by the league last night, and it was not a memo about how we're going to get back to playing. It was a memo that said, everybody, if your players do not have symptoms, you do not get tests. You don't care. He doesn't care if you can get tests or if you have a private way of doing it. He doesn't want it done. And here we are, 6 weeks off of the last NBA game, and we still have a problem with testing. And with the way that the NBA has decided to go forward, and it makes sense from a public relations standpoint, there is no way to go forward until we have testing ubiquitously across the country. And I don't know how far we are from that, and neither does the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, is it really worth it, though? I understand it, because I think this season they have to play so many games to get the television money. I get that. There's a lot of money out there and a lot of money at stake. But it's just having to go through so much just to restart up this season. And then you don't even know if all your players are in the best condition to continue playing this season. So, I mean, I know they're trying to cross their T's and dot their I's and make sure they exhaust every possibility to start the season. I just think it's a little bit too much.
Okay, so this is the continued point that I'm going to make. And I said this yesterday. We had Jabari Young on yesterday from CNBC. And he was, for me, he was way too on the other side of like, no, stop the season right now. I'm not even going to say that I'm in the middle, but I like the way Adam Silver has approached this entire thing. Why would you need to make a decision right now that's going to affect the next 6 months? Like, there isn't enough data to support either way. The data that we have is social distancing right now. Try and limit your travel anywhere as best as you can. Stay on your own or stay just with your immediate family. All those things make a ton of sense. Wear masks, wear gloves, constantly wash your hands. Those are all the things that we know. In 2 weeks, we're going to know a little bit more. In 30 days, we're going to know a little bit more. In 60 days, we're going to know a little bit more. I'm not a fan of right now those who are saying just stop everything. I said this yesterday. I don't even know if it's the right word, but I almost feel like those who are saying it's careless to still be figuring out if you're going to have a season down the road, I think it's careless to just decide this early on, no, we're not having a season, pull the plug, call it a day, wrap it up, let's work on next year. Major League Baseball, I'll leave on the side because they haven't even started their season. NBA and NHL, this is exactly what you should be doing. In my opinion, you really don't even have another option. I think to just say that it would be too premature to just pull the plug right now. The other thing I want to play real quick is Brian Windhorse on the Jump. These are updates on that Walt Disney World proposal and some of the challenges that come with it. And by the way, Windhorse's article breaks down so many different elements of what some of the challenges are going to be. Here's Windhorse.
We talked to dozens of people, to referees, to players, to coaches, to TV people, to hoteliers. And basically, we figured out that it would take 1,500 people inside a bubble to play the games and to play all the regular season games and to play the full playoffs. It would take around 3 months. It's a huge commitment of time. And because of that, based on the conversations I've had with league officials, they don't want to do it. They do not want to limit the players to not being able to see their families. So before they engage in any sort of bubble concept, before they think about a location or anything, there's got to be a comfort level that they cannot be isolated from their families. That is where the NBA is today. I can't say that's where they're going to be in a month or 6 weeks. I can't say where our country is going to be in that time, but that's their operating procedure.
Chris Paul, president of the NBA Players Association, said there are so many layers that would have to come into playing for a bubble, in a bubble, to ever happen. We would have to know exactly what that would look like. There's a lot of hypotheticals out there. Remember when Clayton Kershaw for baseball kind of shot down the idea of playing in a bubble? He's like, nah, I'm good. I'm not going 4 to 5 months without being with my family. And then Mike Trout as well from the Angels, similar conversation. This is going to be incredibly difficult. We don't want to leave our family for that long. I'm not going to argue that. But I remember at the time I was saying that, man, I guess I just never looked at it. And this is that kind of that tunnel vision. I never looked at it from a player's perspective. You just assumed, oh, yeah, if they could get games back, they're going to get checks. They're going to get paid. You want to get as many games in as you can. Of course, everybody's going to be in on this. No, that's not exactly the case, and I think Windhorse saying right there that bubble idea is not as popular. There is also this idea, this showcase of being held at MGM's Mandalay Bay, accommodating 28 teams, and he continues to kind of go into 5 courts placed in a convention center, 2 for games, 3 for practices, with all the teams staying at connected hotels under the same roof. The NBA currently does not have a return to play plan on and remains vague by design. So there's just not enough information. Like to keep this simple, I like to grab all the information that's out there. Of course, the news today coming out about NBA postponing the May draft lottery and the combine. Okay, we know that. Probably the NBA draft will come next. But all these ideas that are being thrown out there, they're literally just ideas. So we'll see what happens. I'll get back into the NBA, but probably a little bit later in the show. I want to shift to the NFL front a little bit. John Orend, Sports Business Journal, he has an article, How the NFL is Set If Needed to Shake Up Its Schedule. So even though the NFL has been in an unbelievable position, they had free agency, went smooth, everyone was talking about them. They had the NFL draft a week ago. They were breaking numbers left and right. And, you know, I was sitting on here with Kirk Morrison. We were going through every draft pick Thursday, Friday, and then, you know, obviously Saturday they had the last three rounds. The NFL now has a contingency plan. If they do have to push their season back, there's some ideas being thrown out there. And I'll tell you what, if they have to push their season back, I could only imagine what's going to happen to Major League Baseball and to the NBA. So John Orand from the Sports Business Journal, he's coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Excited to have John Orand, Sports Business Journal, How the NFL is Set If Needed to Shake Up Its Schedule. John, appreciate you taking some time and joining the show.
Anytime, Alan. Thanks for having me.
All right. So I'll ask you this. I think the article, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking about some of these other sports and how the effects can come into play. It already has, really, obviously, the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball. The NFL has been the one sport that I would say, just from a mere timing perspective, has been very fortunate. What have you before we get into your article and what some of the plans could be for the NFL if things need to be shifted? What's been your thoughts of how the NFL has handled things so far in the offseason and really, like I mentioned, the fortunate position that they're in?
Yeah, I think the NFL has been incredibly fortunate as the coronavirus was starting to spread across the United States. They were able to complete their playoffs. They had a super successful Super Bowl in February, where, you know, the Fox was carrying it. Fox had sold out the ads for it months in advance. I think they were sold out in November. They had big sponsorship sales. It was down in the south of Florida, so Miami. It was a huge success. And then the coronavirus hit, everybody got quarantined, and the free agency period was about to open up, and the NFL decided we're just going to go along as scheduled. It's going to be business as usual. And they got criticized for that, but as a free agency period opened up, you know, it gave, you know, Tom Brady going to the Bucks, it just gave not just sports media, but all of media, something other than the coronavirus to talk about. So they ended up getting cheered for that. They've done deals. They've had, you know, they sold two wild card playoff games, one to CBS, one to NBC. Mm. They made $140 million off that. They did a deal with Amazon just this week, where Amazon is going to stream the Thursday night football games and also one other game per season. That is like close to $100 million per year for that deal. They had an NFL draft on time. That was a very unusual draft, but it was a hugely successful draft. It set TV ratings records, and it just put the NFL front and center. So while the NBA and the NHL and Major League Baseball, it's been hard for them to sort of step out and get into the spotlight. The NFL has had a business as usual approach. That has completely worked, and they've benefited because they don't have live games, which almost certainly they wouldn't be able to play right now.
You know, John, it's interesting because I was definitely one of those that was criticizing, and I was spending time on my show saying, you know, why does Roger Goodell think he could just go business as usual? Here's the reality. They have no question about it. I think have took the right risks. And what I mean by risks is, let's say the NFL draft, if that virtual draft didn't go as planned, if there was a lot of hiccups, if there was a lot of technical difficulties, it could have been one of those events where you're like, man, that was a failure. It wasn't. And I was watching Thursday. I was watching Friday. I was doing some NFL draft shows. So I give them credit because kind of adjusting to the world, and we're all kind of adjusting to it as we sit here now. But I agree. It's been as good of an offseason as you can have. And I didn't actually even know the details of that Amazon deal and some of those other deals that you're referring to. So certainly they're doing something right. And then just very fortunate from a timing perspective. John Oran from the Sports Business Journal joining the Sliwa Show. John, your article, it's titled How the NFL Set If Needed to Shake Up Its Schedule. What are some of the backup plans for the NFL right now if the season would need to get delayed in some type of capacity?
So the interesting thing is, you know, we just went through all the successes that the NFL had. We just went through how the NFL is going business as usual and conducting very real business right now. There are signs, though, and red flags that it's not going to be business as usual this fall. Starting with just yesterday, you know, Roger Goodell said that he wasn't going to take a salary. They started to furlough some people out of the NFL offices. They told sort of more senior executives have to take, you know, certain salary cuts. So they're looking, and it's pretty obvious that the NFL is looking to the fall for, you know, and it's not going to be business as usual in terms of getting sponsorships together. Nobody thinks, at least not at the beginning, that they're going to be fans that are going to be at the stadium. And the NFL is, they're supposed to release their schedule next week. And the NFL, when they release that schedule, there are going to be a lot of contingencies built into it. So, you know, it's going to be, when they release it, a 17-week, 16-game schedule like they always did. But there are going to be interesting things to watch. I'm told that week one is going to be made in such a way that they're going to be able to take week one and put it back at the end of the season. So if they have to delay the season somewhat, there's going to be another week in September where all of the teams, when they play each other, the teams are going to have the exact same bye weeks. So you could have, you know, the Rams playing the Cowboys. And they would both have like a week five bye week, so that if they then had to go go past another week, they could take those and put them in and get rid of the bye weeks. They've been talking to the Super Bowl next year is supposed to be in Tampa. They've talked with the city of Tampa about possibly delaying that by a week. They've talked about possibly even delaying the Super Bowl to February 28th, which would be a 3-week delay. They've looked at the possibility of starting the season in mid-October and having a shortened season. And the whole point of all of these, they're all contingency plans. I have no idea which ones are most likely or not, but it's the league taking a look at just about every single scenario and trying to make their decisions based on what the unknown. They don't know what's going to happen, but they want to be able to make decisions based on, you know, doing the season on time, having it delayed by a week, 2 weeks, 3, 5 to 7 weeks, who knows, but they're going to be ready for that.
So would you say, John, from a priority perspective, is the priority trying to play as many games as you can? And how much of a priority is the Super Bowl of, I guess you could say, floating it a little bit, but not trying to move it too far out? Would you say those are the two priorities?
The priority is to get the Super Bowl. I think they really want to keep in February. I have not heard about a Super Bowl that would be outside of that time frame. And even though they've been taking a look at possibly doing away with the bye week, I'm told that the NFL is much more likely to cut games and have a shortened season rather than do away with the bye week. Although, if it gets to be, an October 15 start date, then they're going to have to do away with the bye week, because they're starting a month and a half later. Mm-hmm. But those would be sort of the two or three things that they're most focused on.
You know, it's interesting, John. John Oren, Sports Business Journal, has got a great article right now, how the NFL set, if needed, to shake up its schedule. You know, I haven't spent as much time talking about the NFL, and what I mean by that is I've talked about everything going on in the offseason, but as far as, you know, delaying their start date, just because you got all these other sports that are before the NFL, and you know, we could put college football in that same category as well. But it's interesting, John, if the NFL, just as an example, has to delay games and have a shortened season, what is that? I mean, what's that going to mean for the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball? Because they're supposed to be in the mix right now. This is supposed to be, I say this on the show all the time out here in LA, this is supposed to be round two of the playoffs. Lakers are supposed to be facing the Rockets or the Dallas Mavericks or the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, that's what you'd be thinking is going on. And it kind of, I guess you can say, to hear contingency plans on the NFL side, which is exactly what they should be doing, man, does that kind of put things in perspective about some of the other sports before them?
Yeah, no kidding. And let's even just talk about best case scenarios. I mean, for sports fans, in a best case scenario, this fall is just going to be nirvana. You're going to have, you know, an NFL game next to a college football game, competing with potentially the NBA playoffs, competing with potentially the NHL playoffs, competing with the Masters or some other, you know, big golf event, competing with NASCAR. Like, everything is going to be bottled up. It's going to be great for the fans. Not so good for the TV networks that all of a sudden it's going to be a glut of places where they're trying to sell high-end advertisers, you know, and the advertisers will get their pick. But for the fans, it has the potential to be really, really neat.
It will be, John, it will be overload. That's what it will be for all of us that have been waiting from a sports perspective. We're going to go from nothing to everything. What is there the plan on releasing the 2020 schedule? You said is next week. I think you said May 7th. Is there any hesitation to that just because there are so many unanswered questions, or is the NFL saying, you know what, if we got to change it, we could change it down the road. But for now, we're going to release it just the same way they did the NFL draft. They did NFL free agency. They didn't kick that can down the road. Do you expect the schedule to be released next week?
I do. I think there are some factions that are saying what you just said. Like, why do we want to release something that we might have to change in a couple of months? Right now you have TV networks and you have sponsors that are really struggling, and they need to get out in the market and start selling advertising. And they can't sell advertising about, like, we're going to have the NFL. They need the specific games. They need to have, like, you know, hey, in week five, we're going to have Tom Brady versus, you know, Patrick Mahomes. You know, and that's going to be one that advertisers are going to want to get to. So they're getting a lot of pressure from their sponsorship and from their media partners to release a schedule early. By early, I mean next week. And that's almost certainly what they're going to do.
Well, that's going to be, you know, I could tell you right now, that's going to be just like the NFL has been over the last, let's say, 30 days or so. It's going to be big news. You know, that is going to be a big conversation. That is going to create a lot of chatter and content. And I know, you know, from a consumer standpoint, a lot of people are going to want to consume that. So I'm with you. I think they do release it. And if things have to be adjusted, it sounds like the NFL is like, sounds good. We'll adjust it when we need to. I'll ask this, and, you know, I know, you know, there doesn't need to be any specific figures or anything like that, but just because this is the Sports Business Journal, I'm always fascinated with the business side for sports, and just kind of more of a broad answer here. What kind of effect do you think this COVID-19 is going to have from a business perspective? The NBA, Major League Baseball, just we're talking about games without fans, and we know that there's certain leagues that a pretty decent percentage of their revenue is coming from there. What do you expect in the next year, 2 years, 6 months from a business standpoint? And do you feel a lot of these leagues, whatever contracts they have with players and so forth, a lot of this is going to have to be restructured?
There's going to be a lot of pain for a lot of the leagues. I think that's plainly obvious. I think that most experts that I've been reading and that I listen to suggests that we're not going to see fans at games this entire year. I think that, you know, if we do see fans, they would have to be socially distant, and they're not going to be selling out any stadiums. So now you have teams or leagues that make probably 40 to 60% of their revenue from media, but then they make a lot of, you know, the other 40 to 60% from ticket sales, from parking, from beer, soda, food,
merchandise. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And all of that is going to pretty much go down to zero. And so, you know, they're going to have to, there are going to be a lot of really interesting negotiations between the leagues and the players associations with all the leagues to determine, like, who shoulders some of this. Cause right now it's, you know, to ask the players to come back to actually play a game with no fans might end up costing some of these leagues more than if they just said, like, we'll just take the season off.
John, I got a feeling we'll be having more of these conversations in the near future. So I greatly appreciate you taking the time. Like I said, great article right now. How the NFL set, if needed, to shake up its schedule. You can find it in the Sports Business Journal. John, thank you for the time, and hope you have a great weekend. All right.
Yeah, Alan, I write about the business of sports. I've never been busier without games being played. So thanks for having me.
You know, it's crazy about that. We're kind of on the same boat. I definitely would not have thought this. There's always new information coming out, and I love going to. It's the first time we've had somebody on from the Sports Business Journal, and it's just great information. So hopefully those who are listening, you know, walk away with some different content, some different knowledge in a certain part of the game that maybe we didn't have knowledge of before. But I would say that there's always storylines coming out. It's just a matter of kind of picking and choosing what to deliver. Okay, let's do this when we come back. This is a good transition because we were just talking about just the financial impact that it's having on sports. And then ESPN had an article today, sudden vanishing of sports will cost at least $12 billion per analyst. And that's not including college football and the NFL. So we come back, we'll talk about that. Also, I want to make a case why the Chargers should not start Justin Herbert over Tyrod Taylor. I'll tell you what I'm talking about coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Ladies line all night. 877-710 ESPN. Where are the ladies at? appreciate you guys tuning in. Some of these promos that run. Gotta love it. Quick reminder. Don't miss episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance on May 3rd, which is this Sunday. Why do I keep saying May 3rd when I know it's this Sunday? 6 p.m. on ESPN and streaming live on the ESPN app. If you missed episodes 1 through 4, you can stream them now with ESPN On Demand and on the ESPN app. So let's kind of get back to I hope some of the stuff that I'm covering right now is definitely not trying to be negative, Nancy. I'm really, really not. But it's also my job to share the information that's out there. The moment positive things come out or we feel optimistic about, you know, potentially getting sports back, I'm one of the first ones to say, guys, look what I just read. Or, hey, let's all talk about this even more from what we've already seen in the article. Or this Jeff Passan had something. Or Adrian Wojnarowski had something. Or whoever it is, right? Just from NFL, from Major League Baseball for the NBA. At the same time, I have to make sure that when there are stories out there that look at it the other side, well, I'm still going to report on it as well. So there's a story on ESPN right now. Sudden vanishing of sports will cost at least $12 billion per analysis. And I bring this up right now because Jeff Oran from the Sports Business Journal, my last question to him is what do you think the effects are kind of for the next 6 months, 12 months, 1 year, or I'm sorry, 2 years of what the effects of not having sporting events right now, there's a huge trickle down effect. All right. So it's not just me and you watching sports sitting in our living room on the couch and being comfortable knowing that there's games on. There's obviously a lot more to it than just that. All the jobs that come with it, all the folks that are down at the arenas that, you know, have jobs for 7 months out of the year if it's basketball. And if your team makes the postseason like we all thought the Lakers would, you could say 8 or 9 months of Lakers basketball. Workers at Staples Center is what I'm referring to. The parking that comes with it. How about, you know, our industry? I'll give you a good example of my industry. So I was on the business side before I was on the radio side. On the business side, you're dealing with companies all day long, sponsors, advertisers, partners. That's a big part of what we do on a day-to-day basis. Well, their jobs have changed, right? All these local businesses that we have here, they're going to be affected. Consumers, your confidence, you know, going out when this quarantine lockdown, whatever you want to call it, when it's lifted or it's they make it some of those restrictions are what's the word I'm looking for? They're lightened up, I guess you could say. It's going to take time for consumers to go out there. So this story, sudden vanishing of sports will cost at least $12 billion per analysis. It's not just the sports part. It's everything that comes with it. I'll read this because I think this part specifically is interesting. So the sudden disappearance of sports will erase at least $12 billion in revenue, hundreds of thousands of jobs, an economic catastrophe that will more than double if the college football and NFL schedules are wiped out this fall. So this obviously doesn't include college football and NFL. And, you know, I think everybody has just kind of looked at those two leagues, NCAA for college football and for the NFL. You've kind of looked at those as, well, they just got fortunate timing-wise. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be affected. They're going to be affected. How they're going to be affected is the Rose Bowl is not going to be packed with 80,000 people that want to watch UCLA. The Coliseum's not going to be packed trying to watch USC take on Notre Dame or one of these great Pac-12 rivals that are in this conference. That's not going to be happening, at least, you know, it doesn't seem like at any time in 2020. So they will be affected. SoFi Stadium, which is trying to, you know, finish off its construction that they got going on with almost $5 billion that's invested, 3,000 workers right now that are working, you know, around the clock to get that SoFi Stadium built for the Chargers and the Rams. Well, that's going to change now. There's not going to be a Taylor Swift concert. We know that. And I'm sure other, you know, other events that were planned there will start getting canceled as well. For me, it's the jobs part of it. That's the part that I feel most bad about. I feel bad for those workers who right now would be at Staples Center and we would be, you know, prepping for round two of the playoffs. Lakers would be taking on the Thunder or the Rockets or the Dallas Mavericks or something along those lines. It's that group of people that I feel for most. I'll read a couple more things from the article. The crisis stands to wipe out more than $3.25 billion that fans would have spent on pro sports. It would erase nearly $371 million in wages, approximately 20 million hours for ticket takers, beer vendors, and other stadium and arena employees. And then one other thing that I want to hear, at least $2.2 billion of national TV revenue would be lost, as well as up to $2.4 billion in tourism related to youth sports. So there's a bunch more things in here, and this article, it goes deep. Most of these articles today, like the Windhorse one I was talking about, incredible amount of details. And then this one as well, incredible amount of details. So I just kind of preview some of it, and I try to give you a little bit of an idea what it's about. But the reality is, it doesn't do it justice. Go on ESPN.com. You can find that title there. Sudden vanishing of sports will cost at least $12 billion per analyst. You know, Jess, I ask you, right? Jess, I mentioned to you when we do some of this prep, I'll tell Jess and I will have a conversation. We'll go through some different topics, and I'll be like, Jess, can you break down this article and that article? And he's like, yeah, I'll do that. What did you tell me about these articles that you were breaking down?
After I broke down these articles and did my in-depth research and read each one several times, yeah. I felt like Plaschke yesterday. I mean, there's so much guidelines that they have to do, and it has to be so
many hurdles. Yep.
Yeah, and it's just at the end of the day, you know, it's not like why even try it, but it's just like I don't know if it's sustainable because you know it. All it takes is one person to get, you know, test positive, and What
do you do from there, type of a thing? That's the thing. Like when I had mentioned to you of kind of going through these articles, and you know, obviously I've read through them as well, but just kind of looking at, you forget how many different industries it affects. There's nobody that, you know, COVID-19 has not affected, will affect, and will kind of have a little bit, you know, I guess you could say this, but maybe the best way to do it, kind of a lasting effect. So that's it from the financial side. All right. So I got all my financial part out of me. One of the things I also promoted, and it was before I went to break, So I kind of was doing some research on this. Remember how I was spending so much time talking about how I switched back on the NFL side of things. I spent so much time talking about how I want to see the Chargers go after Tua or go after a big name quarterback. We were throwing kind of Cam Newton in there, Tagovailoa. I almost forgot how to pronounce it, but I got it back. Tua Tagovailoa. I kept talking about how I want the Chargers. I want them to make a splash in LA because there's just nobody that is that interested in the Los Angeles Chargers. I felt like just right out the gate, that's what they needed. And they had that number 6 pick. Now, listen, let me also be frank about this. The franchise, technically, what are they supposed to do if the team before you takes Tua, right? So Miami obviously had the same vision that I was trying to explain for the Chargers. But in this specific case, now they got Justin Herbert. So one thing that's happened, I think, often in sports, specifically I'm just talking about the NFL, there's two sides to this. One side is whoever you draft at quarterback that early, put them in right away. And there's a number of quarterbacks, I'm going to list down who they are, that right when they got drafted were put under the fire. They are the franchise quarterback, and they're trying to change this organization. Most of the time, they're bad teams. It's not – you don't typically see an early first-rounder go or a top-notch quarterback go, and he's on a Super Bowl champion team. That's obviously not how it works. For the Chargers, they do have a quarterback in Tyrod Taylor, who I'm not excited about at all, as in he's just not going to, you know, put – just draw all this interest for the Chargers. But I think this predicament and situation is different. So here's a question I'll propose to anybody that wants to be a part of the show, 877-710-ESPN. Should the Chargers start Justin Herbert right out the gate, or should Tyrod Taylor have the start and give Herbert some time to kind of dip his feet into the NFL? We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.